Ah, beloved, I'm Pastor Trey, and you're now listening to the New Living Translation. This is Bonafide Bible Talk, because God speaks my language too, and I'm sure enough about to act like it. Let's go. Well, hallelujah, he is risen indeed. This is the first mailbox edition of the New Living Translation after Easter, Resurrection Sunday, 2024. And because y'all are so amazing, we got a couple voicemails that we gonna dig into. We don't got that much time for me to do too much talking on the front end, so without any further ado, I'm gonna let y'all lead us in some bona fide Bible talk. Let's get into it. Beloved, you've reached the voicemail box for the New Living Translation, and this is a dope opportunity for you to take part in the show. So if you have any questions about the Bible, go ahead and let us know who you are and where you're from, and then ask it, and you might make the next episode. In the meantime, make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to your podcasts and leave a rating and a review so that everybody knows where the dopest spot to find bona fide Bible talk is. And remember, God speaks your language too. Let's act like it.
Hello, Trey. This is Amanda from Iowa. There is still hope in Iowa. I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for theologizing bigger and for your ever-present, persistent love for all of us. I have actually two questions. The first from my friend Amy Morris, also here in Iowa. We were talking last night about Holy Week, and I believe it's in John, they talk about after Jesus was, after Jesus was resurrected and appeared to Mary. Right after he appeared to Mary Magdalene, in the very next verses, when she goes to tell the disciples, it says that the disciples were in hiding because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. And we were wondering if the disciples were all hiding together, like all in the same place, or if they were hiding, like, scattered about the city, if they were outside the city, you know, and kind of generally it made us start thinking about, like, what the tension or the vibe would have been in Jerusalem, knowing that Jesus had intentionally not set up an organizational hierarchical kind of structure that the government or the religious factions could then turn around and attack in addition to Jesus, but yet the disciples were still hiding. Like, were other followers of Jesus, other disciples of Jesus beyond the 12, were they also hiding? Had they scattered and left? But Cleopas, who was walking to Emmaus, Jesus appeared to Cleopas. Was Cleopas leaving just to go home, or was he getting out of Jerusalem because things were hot in Jerusalem after Jesus was killed? Just kind of Amy and I were wondering what your thoughts on that were.
All right, Amanda and Amy from Iowa, I appreciate the questions. I also appreciate y'all helping your boy out by asking Bible questions that are right on theme, asking these post-resurrection questions just in time for the first mailbox episode after Resurrection Sunday. Let's get into this. Y'all are asking about a scene that occurs in John's gospel account. John chapter 20, verse 19 is what you're asking about, where it says that the disciples were meeting in a locked room, hiding for fear of the Jews, something to that effect. Now, I want to point out something sort of unique about John's gospel account that we don't really deal with in the synoptic gospels, right? Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew, Mark, and Luke don't have Jesus in Jerusalem too often, if at all, before the events of what we now recognize as Holy Week. Luke's gospel account has Jesus in Jerusalem to be dedicated at the temple at 8 days old, again for a Passover festival and around 12 years old. But it's John's gospel where Jesus in his adult life actually spends quite a bit of time around Jerusalem. Now, let me set a scene for y'all. Jesus is a country boy, right? Even though he was born in Bethlehem, which is not too far from Jerusalem, he grows up in the Galilean countryside. And Jerusalem is the big city. Think New York, but Jesus grows up somewhere in South Carolina, something of the sort, if we want to ground this in an American landscape. And just as in our modern times, there is a lot of debate about who or what constitutes the real America. Is it the rural people who help make all of this stuff shake out for what it is, who are being misrepresented by the people in the urban centers and the coastal elites? Or is there a legitimate cause for the people in urban centers, these city slickers, to have as loud a voice as they do? So in John's gospel account, with Jesus interacting with the city slickers of Jerusalem as often as he does, what we are seeing there is a conflict between what it really means to be Jewish, to be one of God's chosen people. Can that identity be authentically maintained in an urban center that is as defined by the Roman Empire as it is the heritage of the Jewish people? That is a central conflict we see between Jesus and a lot of his contemporaries, whether those be Pharisees or Sadducees or whoever. And a lot of times we miss that because we have this modern concept of this separation of church and state, the separation of religious authority and civil authority, when in reality, in the ancient world, these are usually the same people. And so when we have Jesus bumping head with the quote unquote Jews in the Bible, what we're really dealing with is a rural mindset wherein, no, I am just as much of a Hebrew. I'm just as much the children of Israel as you people here in the city are. Yes, we don't have a temple out there, but God still cares about all of us. And one of the implicit accusations that we have against the quote unquote religious leaders or the Jewish people here in Jerusalem is that they have become too comfortable living like Romans do. So the idea that the Jewish people crucified Jesus, despite the fact that the Jewish people did not carry the authority of the sword or the cross, is really an accusation that you have become indistinguishable from the Romans. The accusation is that you are now behaving as something other than the people of God. And so you're right in noting that Jesus doesn't really institute like a hierarchy or a bishopric for the church before his crucifixion or even immediately after his resurrection, because Jesus doesn't view himself as instituting a new religion here. Jesus views himself as maintaining an authentic Jewish identity in light of the reality of Roman Empire and assimilation. The reality of this urban center as a place where Jewish identity is imperiled is actually something that we see back when Jesus tells his disciples, when he tells the 12, look, I'm headed to Jerusalem and things gonna get real ugly for me there. And Peter's like, nah, it's not going down like that. Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. Like, this is how it has to happen. By the time we get to Jerusalem in the Passion account, and we see Jesus going through what he goes through, and then Peter denies Jesus 3 times because he realizes, oh snap, it's really getting hot over here. And so you're right in noting that Cleopas on the road to Emmaus may have been going home, but it's also a matter of, oh, it's really thick in these streets and maybe this ain't safe for us. So when we talk about whether or not the disciples were hiding together, it's important to recognize that Jesus's disciples aren't just 12, that there are crowds of people who are identifying with this movement, and that I don't think too many of them anywhere, whether we're talking about the 12 or otherwise, feel particularly safe in the urban center where all of this stuff is going down. So in that locked room, I'm imagining we probably have most of the 12, or who remains of the 12, because, you know, Judas met an ugly end, and maybe some other disciples, but not all of the disciples. I also don't imagine there's too many people out there proudly claiming to be disciples of Jesus at this particular moment in history because of all the stuff we just talked about. Appreciate the question.
Hi, Trey. Amanda from Iowa again. Unsurprisingly, I spoke too long. I have a second question, also about Jesus' resurrection or his 40 days that he appeared after his resurrection. Nobody seemed to recognize him. And I thought it was interesting that people's reaction wasn't, oh, that's Jesus, my friend who died. I must be losing my mind. I must be going crazy seeing my dead friend. They didn't doubt their own mind or sanity. They just didn't see the person in front of them as Jesus. They didn't recognize Jesus until he would speak or like reveal his spirit to them. And then they were like, oh, that is the spirit of Jesus. That totally has to be Jesus. So I'm kind of wondering, what do you think was going on? Do you feel like Jesus was changed in appearance physically? Was he concealing himself? Was he doing something to change their perception of him? It was like Moses coming down from the mountain. He just looked real different. Thanks for your thoughts. That's all I got. Hope you have a good one. Bye, Trey.
All right, Amanda. Welcome back with your double dipping self. I ain't even mad at you. You better ask them questions, homegirl. In any case, you must have known that this is one of my favorite themes in the Bible. The fact that after the resurrection, Jesus' own disciples struggle to recognize him. We got this one episode in Luke chapter 24 on the road to Emmaus when Jesus is walking by Cleopas and another disciple, and they don't even recognize him until he breaks the bread, blesses the bread, and passes it out. There's another episode in John chapter 21 where Jesus shows himself to some of the disciples who don't recognize him by the sea until Jesus tells them to cast their nets on the other side of the boat, and they haul in 153 real big fish and the net doesn't tear, and they're like, oh snap, that's Jesus. Now I'm willing to cut them some slack because if Jesus was on the land and they was out in the boat in the water, maybe Jesus was too far away to recognize him. But if you take that in conjunction with what we have in Luke chapter 24, it seems like people have a hard time recognizing the risen Jesus. Now, I have a pet theory here that although we are resurrected into physical bodies, that these bodies are not necessarily made of the same flesh and blood. We see Paul make a similar argument a couple of times. One of them is in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, starting at around verse 40 or 41 or so. And then we have another one in Philippians chapter 3, starting around verse 20, where Paul talks about the glorified body and what the resurrection will be like for us. And the argument is never that we won't take on bodies in the resurrection, but that the bodies will be superior to the bodies that we have now. It's not necessarily referring to us not walking with limps no more or not having scars, so much as the literal matter that we are composed of is different. It is glorified. And so I think it's dope that you call back to Moses coming down from the mountain and glowing and stuff to the point where he had to wear a veil. Because yeah, when we are in the glorified bodies, there's something that is almost blinding about it, right? We don't see straight around this. We see something similar happen when Jesus takes Peter, James, and John up the mountain for what we now know is the Transfiguration. And in that episode, in the 9th chapter of Mark's gospel account, we see that the disciples are actually terrified when they see Jesus in that glorified form. They know it's Jesus because they went up the mountain with Jesus, and all of a sudden, instead of just Jesus, they see Jesus alongside Elijah and Moses. But the Jesus that they see is transformed in a way that is legitimately frightening for them. So now we're dealing with this Jesus that everybody's seen get nailed to a cross, die, and then put in a tomb, only to find the tomb empty 3 days later. They haven't seen Jesus. This doesn't happen in front of their eyes. They just see this body that they don't recognize. And it's not until they see the breaking, the blessing, and the giving of bread that they recognize Jesus. It's not until Jesus tells them to drop their nets on the other side of the boat and they bring in this giant haul, things that they've seen Jesus do in the past. It's not until they recognize the behavior of Jesus. It's not until they see the spirit of Jesus and the spirit of God present that they're able to connect the dots. And so this becomes one of my favorite themes in the Bible, where after Jesus's resurrection, we have to be able to sense the behavior and the spirit of Jesus with brand new eyes. One of the reasons I believe that Jesus says that we have to be born again to enter the kingdom. We have to be able to see things anew in the spirit. Perhaps that's why when Jesus explains what judgment will be like as people are sorted in the sheep sheep and goats, those who did take care of the least of these and those who did not take care of the least of these. And Jesus says, whatever you did to the least of these, you have done to me. It's because Jesus says that when it's all said and done, you might struggle to recognize who I am. And so we had better operate as though Jesus is always present, because Jesus is always present. I find this idea that people struggle to recognize Jesus incredibly humbling, because it means that no matter how much time they spent around Jesus and following Jesus, that in light of the resurrection, Jesus can show up anytime, any place, and we might not even recognize it until we learn how to look for the behavior and the patterns of Jesus. And with that said, let me pray with you. Living God, we ask that you would give us eyes to see and sense your presence in our very midst. And even when we struggle to recognize your body, help us to recognize your behaviors, your character, and your spirit. Amen. Translation is a production of Three Black Men, the podcast about theology, culture, and the world around us. You can follow us on Twitter at Three Black Men. That's the number three, not spelled out, Black Men. You can follow us on Threads too, at Three Black Men Pod. That's the number three, Black Men Pod, over on the Threads app. You can find me on all social media platforms at Pastor Trey 05. That's Pastor Trey 05. You can even link up with me on Facebook nowadays at facebook.com/realpastortrey05. That's Real Pastor Trey 05. The best place to keep up with me is PastorTrey05.com. That's PastorTrey05.com. And there you'll find all of my social media handles. You can subscribe for my newsletter, get regular writings from me. You can even find out where you can purchase my book, Theologizing Bigger, Homilies on Living Freely and Loving Holy. This work has been made possible by a community of folks who've chosen to show their support through generosity. You can join us at patreon.com/threeblackmen. Spell three out that time, though. patreon.com/threeblackmen. There you can find even more original content from Sam, Rob, and yours truly. Make sure you subscribe to, rate, and review the New Living Translation and Three Black Men wherever you get your podcast. And remember, real recognize real. Don't get caught looking unfamiliar.